He's seen as much waste, fraud, and abuse as almost anyone. Now he's stepping down when the United States decided to risk $700 billion to shore up a faltering financial system. Someone had to keep an eye on all that money. That someone was Neil Barofsky, the Special Inspector General for the Troubled Asset Relief Program. Most of the money has been returned to the U.S. Treasury, and now Mr. Barofsky is stepping down. He joins us now for an assessment of TARP and what it was like to be that watchdog. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Good morning.
So let's begin at the beginning. Give us your overall assessment of the TARP program from the IG's angle.
Well, I think it's been a program that's had mixed results. On the one hand, one of TARP's goals was, of course, to rescue the financial system and to restore the profitability of the largest banks so that they can continue to do business. And their TARP has certainly been successful. It has met that fundamental Wall Street goal of saving the system. And you look at the profits of the banks, the executive bonuses of their senior executives, you can see that success. On the other hand, TARP was supposed to do a lot more than just that. It was supposed to help preserve home ownerships. It was supposed to help assist in the recovery. It was supposed to help restore lending. And there, the program has simply not been successful, but has failed.
I want to talk about the lessons learned for these types of programs. TARP was unique and unusual, and you were in a rather unusual position in overseeing it.
Yes, I mean, I think if you're going to take one of the most important lessons of this program is it really is a great example of how a government program should be run and frankly wasn't here, which is if you're going to have a government program, you need to start off with clear, articulate goals. Then you need to measure progress of your program against those goals. And if you're not meeting the progress isn't helping to achieve those goals, you need to change that program so you can ultimately have a successful program. Unfortunately, far too often on TARP, it was a different model. It was declare very, very lofty goals, then have no policy connected to actually achieving those goals. And when the goals failed, instead of changing the program, they just basically set new goals and said mission accomplished, the program was a success. And that really isn't a good, effective way to run a government program.
When you say there was no policy set in place, maybe you could explain that a little more, because it sounds like you're saying that the system was, the TARP program, rather, was conceived in a kind of flawed way.
Well, I mean, it certainly was. And part of that is it could be understood. In the very early days in particular, there was, you know, a complete financial panic that had descended not just on Wall Street, but here in Washington. And the instinctive reaction was to throw as much money at the problem as possible, which was, again, effective in helping to bring our financial system back from the brink. But again, there were certain goals that were articulated. I'll just give you one example. You know, when they decided to put hundreds of billions of dollars in capital to invest in the largest banks, they said that the purpose of that was to restore lending because we're going through a real credit contraction. And lending, of course, is so important for financial recovery. It's the oil that keeps the engine running. But despite making that announcement that this was the goal of the program, nothing was done from a policy perspective to achieve that goal. There were no requirements that the bank were to use the money for lending, no incentives provided to the financial institutions. There was no real measuring of success against that goal. Treasury refused for more than a year to require the banks to report on how they were using the money so we could see if they were using it to increase lending or not. So that's sort of an example, a very small example, of how you can have a really good policy goal but not do something to implement that policy. And we've seen similar things with respect to the housing program.
So it sounds like you're calling parts of TARP just simply a failure, whereas the overall umbrella part of TARP, you know, bringing the economy back from the brink, maybe that worked. On a scale of A, B, C, D, F, what would you grade it overall?
Well, I think it's tough to do an overall grade, but I'd say again, if you go to Wall Street and helping Wall Street and helping the largest banks recover, it's certainly got an A. Just look at how well they're doing. When you look at sort of some of the other issues like preserving home ownership, they get a D minus, if not an F. No, probably an F. So it really is a mixed bag. It's tough to give an overall goal because, again, we think of TARP as this one monolith. But really, the way it was implemented were 13 different sub-programs. So it's sort of hard to give a weighted average grade. You know, when I step down, I'm going to be teaching at NYU Law, and I guess I'll have to give grades like that. But at least for my last couple of days on this job, I'm going to refrain from giving, you know, an overall grade, if that's all right.
Now, one of the interesting things or unusual things about TARP is that it was conceived toward the end of one administration, but then totally embraced by the incoming administration, which pretty much kiboshed everything else that had been done by the predecessors, and that's the way it works. And so it had bipartisan support. Do you think that there was a moment when the incoming crowd might have had a chance to fix some of those policy failures and then not have missed that opportunity?
Well, I think if you look at really how TARP was implemented from a personnel point of view, there was almost no real change in personnel. Sure, Secretary Paulson stepped out, but then President of the FRBNY, Timothy Geithner, who became the Secretary of the Treasury, was instrumental in the design of the program and the government's response. So there really wouldn't have been the inclination towards a revamp because it was essentially the same people. You know, the key decision makers who were running TARP before continue to run TARP in the future. And on the plus side of that, you had a degree of continuity in the midst of a severe financial crisis. But with that also comes the human nature reluctance to reexamine prior decisions and to acknowledge past mistakes. And we have suffered from that as well.
We are talking with Neil Barofsky, the Special Inspector General for the Troubled Asset Relief Program. And we are talking about essentially whether it was a success or not, and it just sounds like different parts of it yes, different parts of it no. Let's talk about the future. Now, you are going to be leaving. Are you optimistic about the government's ability to control this and to handle this in the future?
Well, I think we have some real, real dangers to the financial system. One of the aftermaths of TARP, one of its biggest legacies, is that when, again, First Secretary Paulson and then Secretary Geithner guaranteed the nation's largest banks against failure, which is what they did when they came out and said, we're going to use these hundreds of billions of TARP funds to make sure none of these banks fail. They achieved the goal of helping to preserve the system, but they also created the expectation that going forward that these largest banks would be bailed out again if there's a problem. And right now, as we sit here in 2011, the market really perceives that these largest banks are still too big to fail, and if they get into trouble, the government's going to bail them out. And that really is a perversion on the market. I think Chairman Ben Bernanke put it that way recently. It terribly distorts the market. It screws up incentives. Executives have had the incentive, the rational incentive, to take on more risk with the assumption the government will bail them out if their decisions go awry. And that creates banks that are even larger, even more systemically important, and therefore makes the financial system even more vulnerable to the exact type of catastrophe, of crisis that we experienced in 2008. So I'm very concerned about where we are going forward if something isn't done dramatically and quickly to deal with these legacy issues.
And that brings up another third party in this whole thing, and that's the Congress. And the other component besides TARP in the whole financial issue was the Dodd-Frank overhaul bill of financial regulation. Does that bill address the same problems in reality that the TARP was designed to address? Because it sounds like that bill is more concerned with credit card rates than with these fundamental issues of too big to fail.
I think when it comes to the narrow issue of too big to fail, Dodd-Frank really shifted a lot of the responsibility to dealing with the problem to the financial regulators, and in particular Treasury, who sits atop a panel, a council of financial regulators, in making the necessary decisions to deal with the regulation of our largest banks and the issues of too big to fail. And it gave them a tremendous amount of power and authority, which theoretically could be used to deal with the too big to fail problem. But so far, we're not seeing a lot to give us a lot of hope. You know, in the first place, you're trusting the very same regulators who the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission described as their incompetence and their inability to foresee the crisis as one of the causes of the financial crisis. Second, when you see what's happened so far, again, there's not a lot of great smoke signals that would suggest that they're really going to take on the largest banks. Sheila Bair, who's the chairman of the FDIC, really has stood alone in being an advocate for using the powers of Dodd-Frank to simplify the most complex institutions, shrink them as necessary. But you haven't heard anyone join her in sort of her rallying cry to address too big to fail, and she's stepping down in a couple of months. So there really is a concern that when she goes, will there be anyone still forcefully advocating for using the tools Congress gave the regulators to deal with the situation? And I'm personally not terribly optimistic.
When you talk about the different policies that needed to be put in place that just never came to fruition, can you give me some brief bullet points, some specifics, and who is responsible for getting those policies in place?
Well, again, you have to look at sort of the different programs. So one of the biggest disappointments, I think, for TARP has to be the goal, the very important goal that was part of the legislative bargain that got TARP passed, which was preserving home ownership. And if you go back to how TARP was originally pitched, how we all understood what TARP was going to be, what Congress basically understood how TARP was going to be implemented, it was they're going to buy $700 billion of toxic assets. And what that meant at the time was mortgages and mortgage-backed securities. And as it was explained to Congress, Treasury was then going to modify those mortgages. We're going to own them as the government. We're going to modify them to help struggling homeowners and then sell them back at the market, hopefully for a profit. Well, within weeks, that whole strategy was abandoned when the decision was made to use the money not to buy mortgages, but to inject it directly into the biggest banks. And the whole idea of preserving ownership was shelved for about 4 or 5 months. And then we heard the announcement of the HAMP program, the Home Affordable Modification Program, and the idea there was going to help 3 to 4 million people. What's happened since then? Well, now we're facing the cold and stark reality that that program's never going to come anywhere close to 3 to 4 million. We're right now sitting at about 540,000 ongoing, and really no plan or way of ever coming close to that number. So that's sort of a very significant example of where the policy didn't live up to the lofty goals that were set.
And just a final question. Underneath all of the heads of these regulatory bodies that we've mentioned, SEC and FDIC and so on, there is a standing staff of career officials that they really know how things work at the ground level. Do you think that they were consulted properly in their knowledge and wisdom based on maybe decades of following these things from a career standpoint? Was that wisdom used in the creation of TARP and the policy surrounding it?
You know, I think that when you look at TARP, when you go really into the creation, if you go back into the belly of that beast in October of 2008, there was really a sense of panic, and there really was a sense of let's try anything and everything. And I'm sure they drew on you know the talented career government civil servants who of course form the backbone of so much of what we do. But it really the decisions were made at the highest levels, and they were driven by an understandable panic. And the real question has been since then what has been done. And I think when you look at things like the failures to acknowledge mistakes, failures to sort of address those issues, those are more political decisions than the decisions I would say that typically fall on your GS or even your SES servant. That's really the political appointees who are driving that train.
Neil Borofsky is Special Inspector General for the Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP. He is stepping down tomorrow. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate your time and your insight.
It's my pleasure. Have a wonderful day.